Okay, so this is the Yecheskel Shir Ilu Nishmosam Ephraim Shmuel ben Avram Aryeh HaKohen Chaim Chaya Tova Bas Eliezer Mendel HaKohen on the Book of Yecheskel. We are in chapter 10 and we're up to verse 13. And in chapter 10, we've been discussing the leaving, the departure of God's Merkavah, God's chariot, God himself, God's essence from the Beis HaMikdash. And Yecheskel's been describing things that he's already described to a certain extent in chapter 1, the revelation of God, so to speak, in his chariot. He continues here in chapter 10, verse 13, and he describes what he's seeing as God's chariot is leaving the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh Kodashim. He says, La'ofanim lohem korei ha'galgal ba'oznai. The ofanim, these ofanim, these circular angels that I, Yecheskel, had heard called galgal. And now, the word ofanim means, or ofanaim means a bicycle, ofanim means wheels, galgal also means a wheel. So the actual meaning in Hebrew seems to be, they're similes, they're similar to each other. But it appears, according to most commentators here, that when God passes direction to the ofanim to take some physical action, remember the ofanim are angels that are partially physical and partially spiritual. When God gives direction to the ofanim to take some physical action, like, for example, the chariot, so to speak, to get moving, to take action in the physical world, he announces to them Galgal, as if it's an instruction, an instruction to the ofanim to begin to rotate. And that's what they do. That's how they interact with the physical environment. They do it by rotation, which we discussed in great detail last week. They don't rotate in a circular motion. They rotate in a coaxial basis, in a lateral movement that appears to be circular. And when God wants them to take some action, he gives them the order Galgal. In other words, that the Ofanim, the circular angels, should Galgal, should start to rotate. And exactly how this works is interesting because we have this word Ofan in the Torah. And Rabbeinu Bachai, in his commentary to Shemos, gives us an insight into how the process works, how God, so to speak, interacts with these ofanim and gets them to do his will, his spiritual will, in the physical world. So take you back to when the Egyptians were chasing the Israelites towards the Reed Sea, towards the Yam Suf, prior to the splitting of the Red Sea. It says over there, this is in chapter 14, in Shemos, chapter 14, verse 25, Vayosar es ofan markavoso, and he, so to speak, God's will, removed the ofan of their chariots. Here you have the same word, an ofan. It doesn't say that that the wheel was removed, the galgal. It says the ofan. The ofan of their chariots was removed by inagehu bichvedus, and therefore they were led along sluggishly. The wheels of the chariots didn't work properly. Vayoma Mitzrayim, and the Egyptians said, Anusum ibnei Yisrael, let's run away from the Israelites, ki Hashem nilchom lohem b'Mitzrayim. Because now we can see that God is fighting for them against us, against Egypt. And Rabbeinu Bachai points out here, the word ofan is the same as a galgal. It should have said, vayosa es galgalei markavosov, that the wheels of the chariots were removed, using the language of galgal, because that's a physical word. A galgal is a wheel. But he says, we find in Yecheskel, he quotes our verse, chapter 10 here, verse 13. He says, we see in Yecheskel, chapter 10, verse 13, that the Ofanim are equated with Galgalim. And the word Galgal is a message to the Ofanim to take action. He said, in that context, neither Ofan or Galgal is a holy physical wheel. There's something spiritual about both of these words. It's a reference to celestial forces which cause the orbits of the planets and the smooth running of the physical universe to deviate from their path. In other words, the wheels which make the universe go round are affected. When God says Galgal, as an instruction to these angels, these Ofanim, then they interact with the physical universe and they cause a change in the physical universe as it was at the time of the creation. So that we know at the time of the splitting of the Red Sea, there was a huge change in the order of creation because the Red Sea split. So he writes that at the time of the splitting of the Red Sea, of the Yam Suf, God removed one such Ofan so that the Egyptians were stymied. In other words, God gave instruction to one of these angels to take some action against the Egyptians. And he quotes the Targum Yonosan ben Uziel on Yecheskel, in the first chapter of Yecheskel, who translates the word Ofan as Galgala, which is Aramaic for a wheel, very similar to the Hebrew word. And the point, says Rabbeinu Bachai, is that just as we have a rule that God does not punish a nation here on earth until he has first dealt with their celestial representatives, so here too, the physical chariots did not disintegrate until after God had dealt a blow to their celestial counterparts, which is the Ofan, this particular angel that represented Egypt in the celestial realm. So when the verse says here in Shemos that when they're chasing, the Egyptians were chasing the Jews by Yosar es Ofan Markavoso, it wasn't literally affected the wheel of their chariots, but he affected he gave instructions to this Ofan, this angel that was the angel that represented the Egypt in the celestial realm. To do things to them that made them believe that they were being attacked in some way by God, he says, and in that way the Torah used the word Ofan to describe God's interference with the Egyptians' celestial assistance. Immediately afterwards, the wheels of their chariots on the terrestrial plane in the physical universe moved. But only bichvedus. In other words, they didn't work properly, and they started the chariots started to disintegrate. And he says, according to the way we understand the way these Ofanim work, because we discussed the fact that the Ofanim have on their backs the physical universe, they're the ones that interact. They take God's will, so to speak, which we'll discuss later, and they take God's, so to speak, spiritual will and convert it, transform it into physical action. What these Ofanim did, or what this Ofan did, is he affected the planet Mars. Now, the planet Mars in Hebrew is called Madam, Madamim, which means red, the red planet. The celestial or the spiritual meaning of that is under the auspices of which wars are fought. So the word Ofan is spelt in the verse dealing with the Egyptians defective of the letter Vav. In other words, an Ofan is spelt Aleph Vav Pei Nun. But in the words in the Torah, it's spelt without the Vav. So you have the word Aleph Pei Nun. The numerical value, he writes, of the word Ofan is 131, the same as the Sama'el, the angel, that's another name for the Satan, or the angel of death. In other words, he writes, in Kabbalistic terms now, that the removal of the letter Vav from the Egyptians' chariots spelled death for them. So essentially what he's saying is this, is that these Ofanim, they take direct instructions on a spiritual level from God. They have the ability to transform God's will into physical action, so that this angel that was, so to speak, assigned to the Egyptians was given given orders by God on a spiritual level. They transformed that spiritual will into physical action, and that caused the chariots of the Egyptians to disintegrate. And I know it's a little bit, heart pie in the sky, Kabbalistic stuff, but that's the way Rabbeinu Bahá'í understands it. That's the word Ofan. That's what the Ofanim do. So we'll speak more about the Ofanim in a minute, but Yechezkel now reverts to talking about the Chayos. Now remember, again, the order of hierarchy is you've got God on the top at the highest realm. Below him are the Malchei Hashoreis, including the Chayos, the Chayos HaKodesh, who are called Kruvim in this chapter. Below them are these Ofanim. The Chayos themselves are purely spiritual angels. The Ofanim are partially physical and partially spiritual. And below that is our world, the world of Asir, which is totally physical. So Yechezkel now goes back to the description of the Kruvim, the Chayos, who are in the area of the Merkava, the area of God's chariot, directly below God's throne. So he says something that we've learnt in chapter 1, but he'll add something here in chapter 14, something that he didn't mention in chapter 1 when he was describing when he described the God's chariot in chapter 1. He says, "V'arba ponim le'echod." Each one of the four chayos had four faces. Pneach ho'echod, pneach kruv. The face of the first one was the face of a kruv, of a child. Pneach hasheni, pneach odom. The face of the second was the face of a man. V'ashlishi pnei Aryeh, the third face was the face of a lion. V'haravi pnei Nesher, and the fourth was the face of an eagle. Now, on the face of it, this verse is confirming something we mentioned before in this chapter, that what's being described here by Yechezkel is that there's an obvious change in appearance from chapter 1 of one of the four faces of the Chayos. Now, they're called Kruvim in this chapter, but according to almost every opinion here, it refers to the original Chayos, these original angels that were directly below the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory of God, that's described in chapter 1. But if you remember, in chapter 1, the four faces were the faces of a man, the faces of an eagle, the faces of a lion, the face of an eagle, and the face of an ox or a cow. But in this chapter, the fourth one, the face of the man is still there, the face of the lion is still there, the face of the eagle is still there, but the face of the shor, the face of the ox, or the face of the cow has been or bull has been changed to the face of a kruv, of a child. So we've discussed this before, but just mention the Gemara again, just for the very fact that the Gemara is on this verse, actually. It's the Gemara in Chagig on Daf Yud Gimel, page 13, the face of the ox or the face of the bull has been removed. The Gemara in Chagig says the following: the king of the beasts is the lion, the king of the domestic animals is the ox, the king of the birds is the eagle, and man lords over all of them. But God is exalted above all of them, all of these angels. And the Gemara asks then, with regard to the appearance of the Chayos, which are called Kruvim in this chapter, it quotes the verse from chapter 1, where it says, the Udmus Pneim Pnei Adam, the first face was the face of a man, Upnei Aryeh, the second face was the face of a lion, and the Upnei Shor Masmol, and on the left-hand side was the face of an ox or a bull, Upnei Nesha La Arbaton, and then there was the face of an eagle. And then the Gemara asks, yes, but in this chapter, the face of the bull, the face of the ox has been changed. So why is that? So Omer Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish said, Yechezkel requested mercy with regard to the Jewish people of Yerushalayim, something we've discussed previously as well. and asked that the face of the ox be turned into the face of a crow, the face of a child. And he said before God as follows, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Kaitega Yeosa Snegar, how can an accuser become a defender? Meaning, the face of the ox represents Israel's sin of the golden calf. And I'm now asking for mercy. So I don't want to see the face of an ox, which is an accuser of Israel of past sins. Please remove it. So God removed it and changed it to the face of a child, a kruv, which doesn't represent guilt for a sin. The face of a child represents innocence and mercy. So the Gemara says, what is the meaning of the word kruv, which we've been discussing for quite a while now? The word kruv, the kruvim, the cherubs, which are childlike beings. So the Gemara says, what's the meaning of the actual word kruv? So the Gemara says, Rav Avos says, kirvia. It's an Aramaic word that means a revia is a baby. So kirvia, kruv, comes from the language of a baby. Then the Gemara says, Omara popula baya, Rav Papa said to Abaya, if that's true, what's the meaning of the statement, Peneha echod, peneha kruv, or peneha sheni, peneha odo. In our verse, it says, the first face of the chaya, of the chayas on the chariot, of the kruvim on the chariot, was the face of a baby. Or peneha sheni, peneha odo. The second face was the face of a man. So the Gemara says, why have you got two faces of human beings on the chariot? Like, what's the point of having two faces that are exactly the same? So Abaya said, Abaya said that the difference is that the face of a man is referring to an adult who is prone to sin, and the face of a kruv, which is the face of a baby or a child, refers to the face of someone who is innocent. So this is what's happened here. You have the kruvim in chapter, they have the kruvim but stroke chayos, these angels, these higher angels that are hold up, so to speak, in the sense of the allegory. They don't actually hold it up because they're not physical beings, but the appearance to Yechezkel is they're holding up God's chariot. And in the first chapter, the four faces of the four, each chaya, each kruv had four faces, and each of the four faces were different. So one of the faces of each of the chayos has been changed. And it now represents something that's partially innocent, indicating a child rather than an ox, which is indicative of sin and retribution and the sin of the golden calf. So that's something we've discussed earlier, that they, at that point, the face of one of the faces of the kruvim, one of the faces of the highest changed to represent to Yechezkel that God agreed that he'll be merciful to a certain extent to Yerushalayim, and not everybody would be wiped out. Some would be killed, obviously, but he'd take out his anger, the majority or a lot of his anger on the city itself, which would be burnt down, and the Beis HaMikdash as well, which would be completely burnt down and completely destroyed. Now the Malbim here reiterates something he mentioned in previous verses in explaining this Gemara. He says that the change from an ox, the face of an ox on one of these angels, to the face of a kruv, the face of a baby, an innocent child, is indicative, as I just mentioned, of the efficacy of Yechezkel's appeal for mitigation and mercy for the people of Yerushalayim. He says quite simply, "Ubachol zos hayomidosa rachamim lachalas chamosa olaitzim vavonim." God changing the face of the ox on one of the chayas, or on all of the chayas, into a kruv, into a child, on his chariot, with the acceptance by God that as per Yechezkel's request, God would have his most violent fury on the wood and masonry of Yerushalayim in the temple and the Beis HaMikdash, rather than insist on the annihilation of the entire population of Yerushalayim. And again, Rabbeinu Bachai, continuing what he said in the previous verse, he writes in Shemos, in chapter 25, he says it would have been possible to construct the original golden kruvim. Now, it's important to distinguish between Kruvim and Kruvim, cherubs and cherubs. There are these cherubs that are described in this chapter as angels, but you also have the two golden Kruvim, the two golden children with wings that sat on top of the Aron, the HaKodesh, the holy ark in the Kodesh Kodashim, in the Holy of Holies. So he writes, it would have been possible to construct the original golden Kruvim that sat above the ark of the covenant in the Kodesh Kodashim, in the Holy of Holies, in a way that one was the figure of an adult and the other was a figure of a child. In fact, he says, Yechezkel saw it like this in the vision here, what he's describing. When he says in this verse, Pnei ha'echad pnei ha'kruv, u'pnei ha'sheni pnei odo. The appearance of the face of one of these kruvim was that of a minor, a child, whereas the face of the other looked like that of an adult. He writes, in Yechezkel's vision, the message was that the love of God for Israel was like the love of a father for a son, a formidable and unbreakable kind of love that will ultimately result in, at the very least, partial forgiveness. So again, all these things are going on in Yechezkel's mind as he envisages or he visualizes through this allegorical vision, God's chariot leaving the Beit HaMikdash. Now here we have, interestingly enough, another comment here on this verse. This is from the Benayahu. This is from the Ben Ish Chai in his commentary on Sukkah, in the Gemara on Sukkah, on Daf Hei, on page 5 in Sukkah. He says, "Benira li b'siyata dishmai b'kruv." It appears to me, with the help of heaven, regarding a kruv, regarding a cherub, regarding these, either these angels or these golden figures that sat on top of the top of the ark. Yesh remesh b'zman she'ein osin ritzona shel makom yase imon chesed. That there's an allegory here. There's a hint here that when the Jewish people are doing the ritzona shel makom, when they're doing God's will, yase imon chesed. Lodun osom kikitanim. That God is very merciful to them and treats them, judges them like you would treat a child with a lot of mercy. She'ena barchiyu, people that are not required to fulfill mitzvahs. Ukamosha omru b'mafoshim al posuk. He quotes a posuk from Hosea. He writes here that the posuk in Hosea says, "Ki nar Yisrael v'ahavehu." When Israel was young, a child, I loved him. Umimitzrayim karasi libni, and out of Egypt I called forth my son. And uba emes heim gedolim. Really, Hosea is describing the Jewish people as being led out of Egypt as children. Nar Yisrael, they were children. So he says the reason why Hosea describes the Jewish people in Israel, in Egypt, when they were redeemed as children, uba emes heim gedolim, he writes. That really they were adults, they weren't children. And they were responsible for their actions. Ah, bechasto yodan osom kenar. But God decided in his kindness to judge them at least partially as minors. Despite all the things that they'd done in Egypt, all the inappropriate behavior, they were one of the lowest levels of impurity by the time they left Egypt. Nevertheless, God showed them mercy and treated them like a kruv, rather than treated them like a grown up, an adult. So the appearance in this verse of these two kruvim next to each other, and these two chayos, these two faces next to each other, the face of a man, fully grown man, who's responsible for his actions, and the face of a child who's not responsible for his actions and can be let off or can have his punishment mitigated. They are, in essence, what's going to happen with Yerushalayim. The changeover of the face of the ox to the face of a child, and the fact that the face of the child is now sitting next to the face of a man, means that God, so to speak, is going to mitigate his punishment of the Jews of Yerushalayim, partially like he would to adults, and partially like he would treat a child who is not Baruch Yuba, who is not responsible for their actions. And so that is also a reason for the change of the faces on these kruvim. So originally you had four faces. We'll come back to these four faces shortly. So originally you had four faces, an ox, an eagle, a lion, and a man. Now you've got the ox been changed, and you've got the face of a child instead of the face of the ox. And the face of the child has been placed next to the face of the man, so that there's a comparative here. When Yechezkel looks at the chayos, at the kruvim, at these angels, he can see the change and also the change in order of the faces, as we'll see shortly. But the face of the man and the face of the child are next to each other, so that he can see that God is taking into account the fact that there's going to be some element of mercy dished out to Yerushalayim in its darkest time, when the Babylonians come in 5 years' time and burn down Yerushalayim and destroy the temple. The Ben Yoyada again notes, not in the Gemara in Sukkos, but he notes in the Gemara in Chagiga that we just mentioned, and that he aligns the two parallel verses, one in chapter 1 and one in this chapter, our verse, chapter 10, verse 14, some important inconsistencies. Now, obviously, there's an inconsistency because in chapter 1, the four faces included the face of an ox or a bull. And in our chapter, one of the four faces was instead the face of a child. But he observes other important inconsistencies as well. So I'll paraphrase what he writes, because he writes a very long piece here. He says, the Gemara in Chagiga asks the following question regarding what Yechezkel saw in this verse. What is the meaning of the statement, Pnei Ha'echad Pnei Ha'kruv, the face of the first, the face on the first Chaya, the face on the first Kruv, was the face of a child, Upnei Ha'sheni Pnei Adam, and the second face on these angels was the face of a man. After all, he writes, the face of a Kruv is the same as the face of a man, which is what the Gemara asked originally. He says, so what is the difference between them? He says, the Gemara replied that the difference between them is that the face of a man is referring to an adult who's prone to sin and is worthy of punishment. And the face of a kruv, the face of a baby, a child, refers to the face of an innocent, indicating mercy. Says the Ben Yoyada, he says, listen, the reason the Gemara asks this question is because the order of the kruvim and chayos in this verse has changed from the order in chapter 1. He says, if you go back to chapter 1, what you'll see is as Yechezkel looked at the chayos, these angels, as God's chariot took off from Yerushalayim, that was a year and a half ago in the context of the story, a year and a half before this vision, the order he described is he saw the face of a man first, then the face of a lion, then the face of the ox, and then the face of the eagle. So really, says the Ben Yishchai, the Ben Yoyada, if you swap the face of the ox for the face of the child, bearing in mind that order, there is no way that the face of a man could ever be next to the face of the child. Because if you've got the order man, lion, ox, eagle, even if it's circular and you take out the face of the ox, it'll never be sitting next to the face of the man. It'll either be sitting next to the face of the lion or sitting next to the face of the eagle. He says, and yet we see here in chapter 10, we see the order of the chayos has been changed, where you have the kruv, the child, next to the man, who's next to the lion, who's next to the eagle. So that now the man and the child, the man and the kruv, the child, are actually next to each other. He says, and that prompts the Gemara's question, that the face of the kruv is the same as the face of a man, meaning what are they doing next to each other if they are exactly the same? To which the Gemara answers, the difference is that the face of a man is referring to an adult, whereas the face of the kruv, the face of the child, refers to a baby, indicating innocence and the chance for mercy and mitigation from total annihilation. He said it's not only what you see in these two verses from chapter 1 and chapter 10 is that the one face of one of the chayos has been changed from an ox to a child, but the whole order of how he visualizes the chariot itself has been changed from total, so to speak, guilt and total, so to speak, obliteration to putting the two faces together, one, so to speak, cancelling out the other. So you have the face of a man who's committed terrible sins, representing the Jews in Yerushalayim that have committed terrible sins. And you've got the face of the child, representing the fact that there's an appeal here for mercy, which God has accepted, and he's going to balance the two by putting them next to each other, so that when Yerushalayim is eventually destroyed, there'll be an element of him treating you, God treating Yerushalayim like an adult, worthy of being punished up to and including the letter of the law, and an element of mercy, which is the way you would treat a young baby or a young child if they committed some type of offense. So that's the Ben Yoyada. So that's all easy stuff. But then, of course, it wouldn't be complete. This verse would not be complete with the Avar Benel coming in and making his own observation. Now, we know the Avar Benel is not frightened to disagree with the Gemara. He's not frightened to disagree with the Rishonim. He's not frightened to disagree with anybody. So the Avar Benel says, he says, the inconsistency in the order of the faces of these angels in these two verses in chapter 1 and chapter 10, you have to understand, is well beyond, goes well beyond what the Gemara is talking about and goes well beyond what everybody else is talking about. He says the angels referred to in this verse are not the highest referred to in chapter 1. He says, because after all, in chapter 1, the context of Yechezkel's vision clearly indicates that the Chayas are being discussed exclusively. In other words, in the first 10 or first 15 verses of chapter 1, what Yechezkel is describing as he is shown the chariot of God leaving Yerushalayim, he's exclusively describing the Chayas. These Chayas HaKodesh, these holy angels that that so to speak, hold up the chariot that are at the base of God's throne. He says, however, here in chapter 10, the context clearly indicates that we're talking about the Ofanim, not about the Chayas. The whole discussion we've just had is very clear. And he says, as can clearly be seen from the preceding verses. He says, look back at verse 12. In verse 12, Yechezkel is describing as follows: Vahaofanim Meleim Einayim Soviv. The Ofanim, the circular angels, seem to be filled with eyes, have eyes all over their bodies. And then in verse 13, which we just did before, it says, La'ofanim lohem kore hagalgal ba'oznai. When God wanted the Ofanim to take action, he shouted, so to speak, he gave them an order, galgal, rotate. Therefore, what we can clearly see from the last two verses is when we get to verse 14, which is this verse, which says, now each one had four faces. The face of the first was the face of a Kerub, was the face of a child, and the face of the second was the face of a man, and the third face was the face of a lion, and the fourth face was the face of an eagle. One must assume that Yechezkel is not describing Chayos at all. He's describing the faces of the Ofanim, who also had four faces. So he says this is an amazing thing. He completely contradicts the Gemara, and he says Yechezkel in chapter 1, when he gave the four faces, which were the face of a lion, the face of a man, the face of an eagle, and the face of an ox, he was describing the faces of the Chayas. Each of them had four, each of the four Chayas had four faces, and each of the four faces each of the Chayas had four faces. One was a man, one was an ox, one was an eagle, and one was a lion. But here in chapter 10, he's not describing the Chayos at all. He's describing the angels directly below them, who also had four faces. There were four Ofanim, just like there were four Chayos, And just like the four chayos had four faces, each had four faces, each of the four, their four ofanim, these circular angels, they also had four faces. And the only difference between the chayos, HaKodesh, the holier angels in chapter one, and the ofanim, the only difference was that one of the faces of the ofanim was different from the faces of, from one of the faces of the chayos that were described in chapter one. He says, therefore, we can say that since the ofanim were partially spiritual beings, which is something we've mentioned over and over again, since the ofanim, these circular angels, were partially spiritual beings and partially physical beings, that the first two faces, that of a krub, that of a child, and that of the man, represented something going on in the spiritual realm, namely the continuing relationship between God, represented by the man sitting on the throne, and the Jewish people, represented by a krub, represented by a child, as is, as can be seen in the Kodesh Kodashim, the Holy of Holies. The krub, the two krubim, the two golden krubim, used to engage with each other as a sign of the relationship between God and the Jewish people. So he says here, on this partially physical angel, partially physical and partially spiritual, it had two faces that were essentially spiritual faces. The face of a krub, which represented the Jewish people, and the face of a man, which represented God. And they were next to each other because the relationship between God and the Jewish people is close, father and son. He says, by contrast, faces three and four, which is the lion and the eagle, represent something that is going on in the physical realm. Remember, the Ofanim are partially physical, partially spiritual. So you've got two of their faces that are looking skyward, so to speak, the face of the man and the face of the child, representing within the spiritual realm the relationship between man, which is representative of God, and the child, which is representative of the Jewish people. And you've got the face of the lion and the face of the eagle represents things that are going on in the physical realm. Those two faces are looking down at the physical world and interacting with the physical world. And he writes, this is just, you can't make this up. This is the Bar Benel. Ulachain, and therefore, Ra Panei Aryeh, he saw the face of an, on the face, on the Ofanim, he saw the face of a lion. Why the face of a lion? Romez al Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bovel. It's on the face of the Ofanim, one of the faces of the Ofanim was the face of a lion that gave insight into Yechezkel about who was going to destroy Yerushalayim, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, Shehichriv Bayis Risha, who destroyed the first temple, Shenemar Olav, and Yirmiyahu describes him like this, Ola Aryeh Misovko, Umashchis Goyim Nosa, A lion has come up from the thicket. A destroyer of nations has traveled. He has come forth from his place to make your land a wasteland. Your land, meaning Israel, a wasteland. And your city will be desolate without an inhabitant, referring to Yerushalayim. So Yechezkel is seeing one of the faces of the physical faces of the Ofanim is a lion. So he immediately gets the idea that that's referring to Babylonia. And the king of Babylon is described in many places, not just in the book of Jeremiah, but in many places as described as a lion. Aye, what about the other face? So he says, V'hiya p'niya ha-shlishis, Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, the lion, is the third face on the Ofan. The third face in total, and the first face that is actually physical, has an impact on this world. But Pnei Revi'is, what about the fourth face? He Pnei Nesher. That's the face of the eagle. Yirmos, the Romi. It's a reference to Rome, Shehoya Asidi Asid Osid Lahakri Pam Acheris al Yerushalayim. They're the ones that are going to be the ones that will destroy Yerushalayim for the second time. Ukavah bi Arati Lamala. And I've already explained earlier, Sharomi Taru Osam Anavim Benesher, that Rome are always described by the prophets in the context of being the eagle. Lafisha Kol Kisri Romi Hoyim Avim Al Hanes Vahadegel Shilohem Suras Nesher. Because if you look at Roman history, the history of the Roman Empire, what you will see is that throughout their history, they are represented, they represent themselves with the eagle. And by the way, of course, the prophets of Israel were writing the destructive power of Rome, discussing the destructive power of Rome, wrote well before the Roman Empire ever existed. But the facts are the facts. And Rome was represented on their flags with an eagle. So the Barbanel says, here you see, you've got the Ophanim, partially physical beings, partially spiritual beings, so that they've got four faces. So it's natural that two of the faces should be spiritual faces, the face of a man and the face of a baby, representing the relationship of God with the Jewish people, the baby, and the face of the lion, the face of an eagle, representing the Ophanim's interaction with Jewish history in the physical realm. The lion being the destruction of Yerushalayim by Nebuchadnezzar, and the eagle representing the destruction of Yerushalayim by the Romans, who are represented by the eagle. And and I'll just share the picture with you so you can see it. Where are we? Let's share. Go to share. Share, 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 share. Here we are. Share. I hope everyone can see this. Let me just get it right. This is what SPQR, an abbreviation of Senatus Populusque Romanus, the Roman Senate and people, the Senate and people of Rome. This is the emblem that they carried with them into war, the emblem of the eagle. But I've added on to this because we should absolutely recognize that the inheritors of the Roman Empire, who did a similar act or committed similar atrocities to the Jewish people, were the Nazis. And if you look at the Nazi emblem, you'll see once again that they adopted also this image of an eagle above the swastika. Again, predicted by the prophets, these people, Amalek or Esav or Edom or the Christian world, whatever it is, it's represented by the eagle. And so just like the Romans did, which is, again, the SPQR, the eagle of Rome and the eagle of Nazi Germany, they are both, as the Barbanel would surely point out, he never got to see the flag of the emblem of the Nazis, but I'm sure he would use this, the emblem of the Nazis, if he was alive today, to press home his point. So he's got a completely different approach here. That
can I ask a question?
Sorry? Yes. You can ask a question in 1 second. Let me just finish the Abarbanel. So the Abarbanel says, Hine imkein haponim ha'ela asher zocha kan ba'ofanim. Consequently, we can say a rule. The faces of the Ofanim constantly change. Lo hoyu kafi atzmosom timidim bahem ka'osom haponim shebamar harishon zocha b'chayos. He says, because the Ofanim are partially physical and partially spiritual beings, their appearance changes based on the prevailing spiritual circumstances in the upper realm and the physical realities of what is occurring in the physical natural world. The Chayos, however, who are totally spiritual beings that Yechezkel describes in his first vision, their faces remain constantly the same. So he's saying that the faces on the Ofanim will depend on the two faces that are spiritual, will depend on the relationship God is having with the Jewish people. The two faces that are physical will be dependent on one, what's going on in the world in relation to the Jewish, the interaction of the Jews with all the other nations of the world. They won't always be lions and they won't always be eagles. There'll be different things based on the Ophanim's geopolitical realities of what's going on in the world as they affect the Jewish people. He finishes off by saying, so that the faces we see on the Ophanim in this verse are specific to the prevailing circumstances of this particular vision, which hints at Rome the eagle and Babylonia the lion will be coming to destroy Yerushalayim. And that is the message of these four faces. In the meantime, the two spiritual faces, the faces of man and a baby, are to express the idea that even though the Babylonians will destroy Yerushalayim and the Romans will destroy Yerushalayim and send the Jews into exile, the relationship between the Jewish people, father and son, Avinu Malkeinu, will never change. That, says the Abarbanel, is the message of this verse. Unbelievable. He just takes on the Gemara. You know, the Gemara didn't even consider anything like that. He just takes on the Gemara. He says, no, the Gemara's wrong. Everyone's wrong. Everyone's wrong and I'm right. So yes, you had the question.
Yeah, okay. First of all, the eagle. Should we be concerned about America? Because America has the eagle today.
So
that's one thing. And two, Abraham is referring to the Nesher as an eagle, but we know that today we might consider that the Nesher is actually a vulture.
Yeah, so, but that's in modern Hebrew, not in classical Hebrew. In classical Hebrew, a Nesher al kamfei nesharim, it always refers to an eagle. Always. There isn't a reference in Tanakh of a Nesher referring to anything other than an eagle. Al kanfei nesharim, on eagle's wings.
But why do we call a Nesher a vulture?
Why?
Were no eagles in Eretz Yisrael at that particular, certainly at the time of Rashi. So
Rashi lived in the 11th century.
Right. And even he was referring to eagles as opposed to a vulture. So it's a little confusing.
Well, no, the word Nesher means an eagle. In classical Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, Nesher always means eagle. Never means anything else. Doesn't mean anything else.
So should we always be aware of any country that uses an eagle as its...
Your first question is an interesting question. I'll tell you something. I really don't want this on tape, but I've got no choice because we're being recorded here. But a Kabbalist I heard once from, and we're not talking about, you know, some penny ante player here. We're talking about one of the great Kabbalists alive. He said, "Be very careful of America." He said their emblem is the eagle, and any country whose emblem is eagle, we should be afraid of. He says, and in any case, if you look, this is what he says. If you look at the word Esav, Ayin Samach Vav, and you write it in the English way, Vav Samach Ayin, you get USA. So he says, we should be very careful of putting all our eggs in one basket and trusting a nation that has an emblem of an eagle. You're quite right. The emblem of an eagle throughout Tanakh is an enemy to Israel. Although, so far, so good, right? So far, so good. They've been our greatest allies. But as we know from Jewish history, and we know from the Tanakh, at the end of the day, every ally that Israel has relied on throughout Jewish history, they were in the land of Israel for 850 years. every ally that they thought they could rely on turned on them. Whether it was the Assyrians they made treaty with the Egyptians they made treaties with, the Babylonians they made treaties with, the Pelishtim they made treaties with, the Ammonites they made treaties with, the Moabites they made treaties with, the Aram, Syria they made treaties with. Every country, apart from one particular Hiram, the king of Tyre, who was the king of Hiram Melech Tyre, Sur, the king of Lebanon. He's the only ally that the Jewish people had in the Tanakh that didn't turn on them. The only one. Everybody else turned on them. So, I think you're making a fair point. We should be very wary of allies. What was it the Godfather said? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. We should be very wary of Jewish history. I mean, I'm not talking about pictures of the eagles and whatever, but we should be very wary of Jewish history of putting all our trust in allies. The only ally we can really trust is the being that's preserved us for 4,000 years. A baby lamb surrounded by 70 wolves, right? And we're still here. So we're being protected, but we're not being protected by America. We're being protected by God. I think it's a very good point, very interesting point. Okay. So that is the amazing Abarbanel, he says there. So this isn't a description. This is a different description. This is a description of the Ophanim. And the Ophanim are partially physical, partially spiritual. And what Yechezkel is describing what God's showing him. God's showing him that on a spiritual level, the two faces of the Ophanim represent the spiritual relationship of father and son between God and the Jewish people that can never be broken. And on the other hand, the two other faces are physical faces that are relevant to Yechezkel, relevant to the short term or the shorter term, the middle term future of the Jewish people. The lion representing Babylonia, who will come and destroy Yerushalayim. The eagle representing the Romans, who will come and destroy Yerushalayim. But at the end of the day, in the physical realm, the relationship between God and the Jewish people will never be broken. And therefore, the Jewish people will, of course, never be destroyed totally. So that takes us on now to verse 15. And in verse 15, this seems to fit in very well with the opinion of Abarbanel, because we know that verses 12 and 13 were talking about the Ophanim, and verse 14, if you read verse 14, in its entirety, there's no mention of the Chayos at all, no mention of the Chayos HaKodesh. It just says, V'arab aponim le'echod, after discussing in two verses, 12 and 13, explicitly, and exclusively about the Ophanim, it just says, "V'arab aponim le'echod." Each one of them, meaning obviously, if you're taking in the context, each one of them, what we've just been talking about, which is the Ophanim. Each one of them had four faces. One was the face of a child. One was the face of a man. One was the face of a lion. One was the face of an eagle. And then now, as if to prove the Abarbanel's point that was a description of the faces of the Ophanim and not the faces of the Chayos. Verse 15, because now in verse 15, Yechezkel does describe the Kruvim, the Chayos, and he describes liftoff. This is liftoff of God's chariot. Vayeromu ha-Kruvim hi ha-Chaya. And the Kruvim were lifted, hi ha-Chaya. It was the Chaya, or the Chayos, asher ra'isi b'nahar kavar, that I had seen in my original vision a year and a half ago on Shavuos, when I was walking by the river of Kavar. So it appears, at least on the surface of it, that the Abarbanel is quite right. But there's a problem with this verse, and I think this is a good place to stop, because this verse is a little bit tricky to deal with. And the reason it's a little bit tricky is because of the language of the first four words of the verse. It says, Vayeromu hakruvim. Now we know the word kruvim in this chapter refers to the chayas, right? And he tells you that. Vayeromu hakruvim. The kruvim were lifted. The kruvim, plural, were lifted. And Yechezkel's now confirming to you, if you want to know what the kruvim, what I mean by kruvim in this chapter, he hachaya. That was the chaya. Now, you can't say that the kruvim, plural, lifted up, and the kruvim were the only chaya, because kruvim is plural, and chaya is singular. So if you read the verse literally, and the kruvim were lifted, and it was the living being, it was the chaya that I had seen by the river Kvar. Now, it should have said, Vayeromo hakruvim, that the kruvim lifted up, they had lift off of God's chariot. Hein hachayos. Yeah, and what I mean by that, they're the same that I'm referring to, the chayos, asher ro'isi b'nahar kavar, that I originally described to you in chapter 1 when I was walking by the river Kavar. So that is going to be our discussion point next week. Why are the kruvim here described in the plural, and the chayos are described in the singular? If we got a minute or so before the end of the show, that's where we'll pick up from verse 15, where it becomes. Yeah, this chapter's weird, by the way, and it doesn't get any less weird as we move along. But towards the end, and there's a very strong message coming out of this chapter as well, which we'll have to discuss. But we just got a minute. If anybody's got any questions, now's the time. Don't all rush at once. I can't cope with the rush. Rob Hyde, what's your question? I've got a question for you. Where were you on Sunday morning, man?
I was on TO. Rabbi, but you did say that the Hebrews in Egypt were punished. Why? What were they punished for?
Who were punished?
The Jews in Egypt.
So, yes, it's quite clear, certainly from Rashi, that only 20% of the Jews left Egypt. The other 80% died in the...
Okay, but not during their stay in Egypt.
Not during their stay in Egypt, no. They lived an impoverished life, but...
Exactly.
Yeah, they lived an impoverished life, but like most impoverished civilizations, they produce huge amounts of children.
Yeah.
Okay, if that's it, we can go. I've got a big problem with my phone. If anybody can just make an announcement, which has got nothing to do with the shiur. Larry, you can turn the recording off. This has got nothing to do.